Hi, I'm WTOP Entertainment Editor Jason Fraley, and we're here with the one and only Big Kenny of Big and Rich, who you are coming to the congressional baseball game on Wednesday in D.C. Thanks so much for taking the time to join us, man.
Yeah, man, I'm super excited about coming back to D.C. What a good time this is, looking forward to being.
Now, what you said coming back to D.C., you're originally from, Culpeper, Virginia, right?
Yeah, I'm my hometown's Culpeper, Virginia, so I think we're exactly 90 miles away from Washington, D.C. And every time I'm coming through the East Coast, you know, now I've got a couple young boys, too, I love to bring them through D.C. I think it's just a great celebration of America, beautiful buildings, monuments. There's just so much to see and do and so much for the kids to learn, man. I love it.
Awesome. And what will you be doing? You'll be doing the national anthem?
Well, no, they don't have me doing the national anthem, but we do have a surprise, I think, coming sometime around the fifth ending with a Big Kenny rendition of Take Me Back to the Ball Game.
Oh, that'll be awesome. Yeah, that'll be really cool. I can't wait to hear your version of Take Me Back to the Ball Game. That's so good.
Yeah.
Were you a baseball guy growing up? Because I know the Nats wouldn't have been around when you were growing up. Were you Orioles, or what are you in Virginia at that point?
Yeah, it was the Orioles at that point, back when I was a kid. And yeah, you know, Pop liked to watch a little baseball. And, of course, the boys in my family, we all played a little baseball. And, you know, we're raised on a farm there, so we had a big field out back, and we'd be getting the game up whenever we could, but in between the rest of the work. But I tell you what's so super exciting about this game is not just the baseball, but it's just the coming together of everyone in D.C. to do good. You know, this event is the greatest celebration of bipartisanship for good in our capital. And that's really what I find just super exciting about it. It's just seeing people get together, you know, no matter what their political opinions are, to have fun, to celebrate not only baseball, but to celebrate our country and our community and to give back inside of our community. So that's just a super exciting thing to see and to be a part of. You know, I know there's so many that are really looking forward to that day.
It's such a great point, because day in and day out here in D.C., you hear all about, you know, the partisanship and Republicans and Democrats and all the elections and arguments. But, man, it's nice that they can sit at the side and just, you know, lace them up and come out of the dugouts and just play a nice game against each other.
I
think it reminds everybody that we really have more in common than we don't have in common.
Yep. That's it, man. That's it. And of course, also this day, there's going to be, we're also going to be celebrating our veterans and first responders, primarily our Capitol Police. You know, that's a big one also. You know, I got a bunch of friends in that world you know, just knowing what they've gone through at times, what they go through continually to, you know, keep everyone safe here in the Capitol. I think it's especially important that we, you know, do a toast to them also and commend them for the great work that they do.
Awesome, definitely. Now, you mentioned that you grew up in Culpeper. How did you, you know, how did you start playing music and eventually make your way down to Nashville?
That's a lengthy
story. It's a long story.
But to make a long story short, you know, I was working on the farm there in Virginia and working in construction. And really, you know, I was brought up, I was playing music as a kid. I was brought up that music was something, you know, good to have in your life. But you really had to be out there working a real job. So the realization though happened in my life right around 1990s with there was a savings and loan crisis that swept across the country, and it really put everybody out of the construction business. So my friends were always saying, "Hey man, you sing pretty good. You ought to go to Nashville." So lo and behold, after I got everything tied up that I could, I went to Nashville. I didn't know anyone. I just kind of went to the city and said, here I am. Let's see what we got going. I want to make some music. And, you know, I wrote songs every day and had a band, got a band together within a few months. And next thing you know, I'm playing four nights a week. And I just worked until, you know, it seems like no time at all. But next thing you know, 1999, I got a record deal, my first record deal. And then I got my, you know, we only got the whole Music Mafia thing together there in the early 2000s. And then it was 2003 that John and I got signed as Big and Rich. And then I guess a lot of us, you know, the rest of the story everyone knows from that point. Now we're going on, like, 15 years of a career as Big and Rich and touring around the whole country this year with the Peace, Love, and Happy Hour tour. And things are just going as great as ever. And we so appreciate all the fans that come out to see us everywhere. We're playing the biggest festivals that are going on across America right now and North America. And it's just a blast, man. It's just a blast. So I'm super happy I was able to work this into my schedule this year and be here for the congressional baseball game, man. This game has a super history of its charitable giving inside of the community here also. It makes it a super, super everything good that America's about event going on, and I just couldn't be happier or prouder to be able to make it this year.
Totally. And if you got a few minutes, I have a couple Big and Rich questions for you. First of all, you meeting John Rich, how did that happen? So you're already in Nashville a couple of years playing four nights a week, you're saying, right? How did you actually meet?
Well, John and I got introduced by a gal named Cindy Simmons that was working for Fender and Guild Guitars at the time. She was an artist rep. They called her the Fender chick. And she knew me because of my band playing around Nashville, and she knew John because of the band he was in at that time, Lone Star. But John had gotten he'd gotten removed from the band. He'd left the band. And she knew that he was, you know, a great songwriter and had, you know, a sundry of interest in music just like myself. I thought we would do great writing together. She just thought we both had the same sort of inspiration. And brought him out to a show one night. I was playing a little club in Nashville called Douglas Corner. And at the end of my shows back then, I used to think it was always good to bring something you could give to people. They'd have something to leave with to remember the show by. So I would, you know, go out and get a, you know, a big bag of you know, after Halloween price candy. A big bag of after Halloween price candy. And that night I had a big bag of, I think it was double bubble gum. And at the end of the show, I'm slinging it out to everybody. And I grabbed a big handful, make sure I got them all the way to the back of the room, which happened to be where John was standing that night. She brought him to the show. And a piece hit him right underneath his cowboy hat on his forehead between his eyes, man. And he said, when he came to the show, he was going, you know, what's a big Kenny? What am I going to meet? And he said he didn't know if he was so interested in meeting this guy named Big Kenny. But and then after that hit him, he was really having his second thoughts. But she introduced us and you know, kept at it until we finally got together and wrote a song. And a writing session went so well, we got together the next day and wrote another song. And by the end of that year, we'd written about 100 songs. So
wow.
She was right that the writing dynamic was fantastic between us. And, you know, it was really our songwriting that brought us together for our first record deal. Because John had gotten another solo deal at that point in time. But that didn't go so well. But worse, because of the Music Mafias, we've been asked to come in one morning and meet with Paul Orley at Warner Records. He'd just taken over the job there as the GM. And we sat down with our guitarist, thinking we're playing him some new songs to pitch for artists there. You know, we're thinking we're going to get us a Martina McBride check, which we did, by the way. But he stood up and said, slapped his hand on his desk and said, I want to do this. And we go, you want to do what? You know, cut one of our songs? He says, no, I want to sign you two guys as my first act signing to Warner Brothers. And
damn.
So it really just happened as a shock. And lo and behold, you know, we put out our first album on Warner Brothers. It came out in 2004, and in that same year, Tim McGraw took us out on tour with him to 86 cities around America. And, you know, the same horse out of Cowboy came out that summer, and everything just blew up. And it's been going like rocket ships ever since.
Absolutely, man. That I'll never forget when you guys blew up, and a lot of people that come out to the Congressional Baseball Game, well, of course, we'll know you from what you, the song you just mentioned, Save a Horse, Ride a Cowboy. How did you guys come up with that? That's going to be playing forever. I mean, that's like one of the most fun, but also creatively, you know, lyrically, that's just a creative idea. Like, oh, why ride a horse? Just hop on me. How do you come up with that?
Nuts. This is a nuts thing that happened, but I had been asked to be a mentor to 50 students that had won a essay contest to come to Nashville and be put through all aspects of the music business for 30 days, all expense paid. It was called the Priceless Edits Program, and I had been asked to be their music mentor, so I was to break them up into groups of 10, write songs with them, and then take them in a studio, show them how to recording process. And then we're going to hit the stage and perform them live. So in the midst of me getting this job, I'm reaching out to my friends, and you know, I asked John. You know, John and I write all the time. And John, will you come write these with me? And in this one group, you know, of 10 students, it was 50 of them total, one group of 10, had gone around the room and just meeting everybody, asking where they're from, and they're all from different states and different places. And the first time we did that, different states, different places, I said, I got this song out here called Coming to Your City, and all these places here, you know, those are places we're going to be coming. So we ended up writing about all those places in this song that became a hit called Coming to Your City, which you probably know from College Game Day Football. It's been the theme song for that now.
No, you said it wrong.
Over
it's,
10
it's,
years.
It's coming
right?
to your city. It's city. You got
to
say it right.
Coming to your city. So those 10 places in that song came from the 10 places those 10 students were in that group. So then there's another group. We're going around, meet everybody, find out where they're from, and you know, start talking about the songwriting process and just ask. So has anybody here in the group heard anybody say something since you've been here in Nashville that you thought was just kind of crazy and weird? You might make a good song title. And this one girl raises her hand and says, we walked to the Wild Horse Saloon last night, and I hadn't been in there 10 minutes. Before this cowboy comes up to me and says, hey, darling, you want to save a horse and ride a cowboy? And she goes, you know, I go on and I said, I'd seen it on a bumper sticker somewhere, but I'd never had anyone ask me that before. John and I looked at each other and said, well, that's our song. That's our song. That's got to be written. And within the next hour right there in front of them, we wrote that song.
That's genius.
And
well,
it turned out to be our Stairway to Heaven. You know, it's our sweet home, Alabama. You can't play it anywhere and not drum up a party. And, you know, in a town like Music City now that's got 100 honky-tonks blaring out live music on, you know, Lower Broadway, you can go from pub to pub and probably hear the song a dozen times in any given night. And it is just that popular.
It's so true. You're right. I mean, that is your sweet home, Alabama. It'll be played forever. As long as country exists, that song will be around.
Exactly.
But that's just a fun party one. But if anyone were to say, oh, that's just a party group, all they got to do is put on Holy Water. Man, you guys can do some serious, serious issues too. I know that was a little personal to you guys. Remind our listeners how you can deal with a serious topic like that too.
Yeah, well, you know, life's not all just fun and games all the time. And music, I mean, especially country music, I think is they're able to breach and talk about things that are, you know, super important or emotional issues in people's lives. And, you know, in the case of Holy Water, it was abuse. And, you know, abuse we found at that point in time, you know, when John and I were talking about it, and that, you know, it seemed like the almost half of the girls you talk to or half the people we talk to in our lives, you know, have been through these horrific situations. And it seemed like, you know, music was the one thing that could, you know, bring some closure or comfort or you know, some compassion to that issue. And so the song Holy Water came about. it was another one of those songs where you write it, you don't know how it's affecting people, but you start playing it live, and all of a sudden you have people come up to you and say, man, that song just, you know, it just changed my whole look at things, and thank you so much for writing it. Or, you know, years after we wrote it, have people come up to you and thank you, that song saved my life. I mean, it's just amazing the power a song can have. You take Holy Water, and another one I think that's been, you know, one of our most poignant from a storytelling standpoint is the song The 8th of November.
Yeah.
Written about a story from this Vietnam vet that John and I met in Deadwood, South Dakota. His name is Niles Harris. He was a bartender there. The first time that we'd ever played a juke joint that had Big and Rich on a ticket, 2002 Deadwood, South Dakota. We're playing, you know, maybe 100 people in the room. But this guy was a bartender, had that top hat on. I'd gone to meet him in between sets, say hi, grab a cold beverage. And next thing you know, we became friends. And the next day we grabbed breakfast, we're riding around. He's going to show us the Gold Mountains and the Black Hills, you know. And next thing you know, I'm hearing all these stories about him. And you know, over the next time we had the friendship got to where the story was deep enough that he's going, you know what, you guys ought to write a song about this. And lo and behold, sitting there in Deadwood, South Dakota, we wrote that chorus. And then, you know, over time, as we, you know, got more of his story, Niles had come to visit us in Nashville. We were recording the record, believe it or not. And you know, we got the completion of his story and wrote out the story that became the song, The 8th of November. And then we actually traveled back to Vietnam with him, where he was wounded in War Zone B that day. We told his story in a documentary. We got our friends, Leonard Skinner and Gretchen Wilson, to help us out for a big show that we threw in Atlanta, Georgia, back in 2007, 2008, somewhere in there. Anyway, it raised enough money that day to finish off the budget to build the memorial for the 173rd Airborne in Fort Benning, Georgia.
Wow.
And so we now have that memorial standing there for all those, you know, that have lost, all those warriors that were lost, or family members that you know, suffered loss from that day. But now we also, now we get together in the first week of August in Deadwood, South Dakota again, and we throw a party up there during the Sturgis Bike Rally and continue to raise money for our veterans and the ongoing maintenance of the memorial there in Fort Benning. We actually got to visit that last summer. It's pretty powerful to go back and see it and realize how much it means to all those guys and families.
Wow. Thanks for that story. I mean, I've been up to Deadwood and Sturgis and the Black Hills. I mean, that's beautiful, but I didn't know your whole story with the monument in Georgia. That's fantastic, guys.
Yeah, man. And so if you're coming through the rally this year, I think it's August 6th, Tuesday. That Tuesday, we always do the party right there, Main Street Deadwood, there at the Deadwood Mountain Grand. So please come visit if you're in that area.
Awesome. Well, I know a lot of our listeners will know you're the Big and Rich stuff, but just before we hop off here, I wanted to remind them that, you know, you were talking about, you know, how you and John were songwriters, but I know you've written a lot of songs for other famous country artists like Gretchen and Jason Aldean, and didn't you write Last Dollar for Tim McGraw too?
Yeah, Last Dollar for Tim McGraw. That was a powerful, powerful song. And it became a number one song, and then, man, all the things that happened from that are just unbelievable. But yeah, that is another one of those kind of story songs, but it's also just a good term and song also. But man, I had been through, I hate to say, more than once, that place in my life where I was down to my last dollar. I was down to my last dollar again in 2002 in Las Vegas, in between record deals. It was right before John and I got found that last time. Man, I'm out there. My manager at the time, Mark Oswald, was doing the Alabama farewell tour, and it was the first show. So he told me, if you can make your way out here to Vegas to see it, I've got a free hotel room for you, and I think you'll really enjoy the whole experience. So went out there to see that show, and that's New Year's Eve, so I celebrated New Year's Eve with them in a nice big room overlooking, you know, Main Street, Vegas. And next thing you know, it's 2, 3 o'clock in the morning. I'm going to be heading back to Nashville. Got an early flight. But, you know, I only going out there on a couple hundred bucks, my name, and it's pretty easy to blow that just trying to find a meal in Vegas. But I'm down to probably $100, and about 3 a.m. in the morning, I'm going, what am I going to do? I got to pay my bills when I get back to town. So I went and sat down at a blackjack table like any of us would have, and I started figuring out I would just turn it into what I need. And I'd play for about 3 hours. It's probably 5 or 6 a.m. in the morning, but now I've got to get back to my room for this early flight. And I had won 10 hands in a row. I'd gotten my money up to about $800. And if I won one more time, that was going to be everything I need to pay my bills, my rent and everything. And so I was feeling real good about it, and I pushed it out there. And lo and behold, that dealer who had dealt me 10 winning hands, she, on that hand, decided to deal herself a blackjack. So it didn't turn out exactly like I'd hoped it to, but it actually turned out even better. I had two chips left. I had a $20 chip. I gave that to her, told her how much fun I'd had, and I grabbed that $1 chip and pushed myself away from the table and said, I'm going to keep this because I'm going to need a little something to start over with. And I went up to my hotel room. I sat down on the corner of the bed. I went to pull off my boots, and the heel pulled right off the bottom of my boot. So I laid back on the bed, and I went, what next, Lord? It was at about 30 minutes, and I got down to my last dollar of walking on my shoes. Really small reminder of all the hell that I thought they would. Look at me still smiling because I'm wondering what I'll do. Because since I ain't got nothing, I got nothing to lose. And 1, 2, 3, like a bird, I thank you. You've given me such a beautiful set of wings. And I'm so glad you're all here today because tomorrow I might have to go and fly away.
And fly away.
Fly away. Fly away. Fly away. Fly away. And then, who'd have known it? But man, so then all that year in 2003, I'm playing that song everywhere, Writer's Night, wherever I am. I tell people loved it. But I was broke, so I couldn't get in the studio and record it. But in 2004, things changed around a lot. You know, we've been out on tour with Tim McGraw that year. And so when it got to the end of that year, you know, I paid off all my bills, and I could go back in the studio to record some demos. And I'm in the studio recording demos. It was right around Christmas and New Year. And Kim happened to be in the same studio there working at the same time and came in and heard that song and asked him if he could cut it. And I went, well, I don't think I could tell Kim McGraw not to cut one of my songs. So, yes, you want to do it, you can do it. He cuts the song. And then his record label told him he couldn't put the record out because they were trying to keep him signed for a few years longer. They made him put out some greatest hits. So the song it didn't end up coming out until 2 years later. It was 2007. But it was the first song he put out off that album, and it went to number one.
And once that song went to number one, were you able to fix that boot?
Once the song went to number one, I was able to do a lot of things. And what I did is I took my check that came from BMI, and by then I'd been made aware of a bunch of situations going down around the country. We one check went to pull, you know, help gals that were on the streets here in Nashville, in Music City, went to an organization there. Then another one, it was pulling homeless kids off the streets out in L.A. that a great friend of mine, actually one of my ministers to this day, Damien Horn, has been helped by that project. And then there were these gals up here in the Northeast that showed me, made aware of the situation. I mean, it was going down over in the Sahara where these gals were, you know, just the most terrible, horrific things being done to them. And so we bought girls, we helped them to another organization to try to buy as many of them as we could out of slavery, and over the next 2 years, we got the first girls' school built in the middle of Sudan, believe it or not.
That's
so
awesome.
You know, it just took on some of the most hellish conditions that we saw there at that time that were presented to us, and tried to do whatever we could about it. And you know, still to this day, you know, trying to do what we can wherever we can, and you know, a lot of that involves children wherever they are, and making sure our children got something to eat. you know, at least got a chance at a life in front of them. And they're veterans and first responders. That's all personal to me because of, you know, family members that have served. You know, I was a volunteer. Me and my father helped build our volunteer fire department back in my hometown there in Salem. You know, the community inside of Culpeper. You know, I've got relationships with veterans and military folks from years and years now. And you know, those are all just people that I think are there on the front lines that should be really important to all of us. And so that's another reason that makes it just super exciting for me to be able to, you know, be here and be part of the congressional game. And I know they do so much here in the community, too, you know, for all sorts of projects, helping children and helping our veterans and first responders. So it's just a super, super, super good one for everyone, man, and I think a great one for Washington, D.C. So I'm looking forward to being here that day. You never know what might inspire another song. And it's great to tell you a couple of stories and appreciate your time, man. And hopefully we'll see everyone there at the ballpark.
Yeah, you've been more than generous with your time. We got a lot of great stories out of you. So thanks so much. We appreciate it. Everybody come out Wednesday, the congressional baseball game, with a special Take Me Out to the Ball Game by Big Kenny of Big and Rich. Thanks so much, man. This is
great. Yeah, and be there with my friends from Ride TV also, you know, representing all the horse riders there in America and our whole agricultural rural community, which I'm engaged with also. So, you know, hopefully a few of those fans from out here in the surrounding counties around D.C. will be able to make it in for the game also. And we're really looking forward to it. God bless you, brother, and hope to see you there next week.
Yes, horse riders and cowboy riders, right?
Okay. You got it.
All right, man. Thanks again.
Take care, buddy.